I'm here starting this.
You're
talking about myself. Awesome. I'm so good at that.
Bethany's favorite pastime. Welcome.
It's talking about Tenny's pizza, which, if you know me, for one, I feel like I'm a pretty healthy person most of the time, but I love pizza. Like, it is the one thing in life I will never give up. If someone says to do this diet, you can never eat pizza again, and be like, peace out, never happening.
Truth.
But
there's two things, pizza and alcohol, you won't pass up.
Those two things. Nope. Yeah. You tell me those are off the list, we're not friends anymore.
It's not happening.
But if you are trying, there are times when you got to like pull it together, like, hey, I got this trip coming up. Oh, wait, that's not happening right now. But you want to like get healthy for a little, there are times you got to like tighten up your diet a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, not having some cheat days for a little bit. We have actually some really healthy options. So don't sit there and be like, well, I can't order pizza because it'll make me fat. Liar.
Well, it's like, even with me, we're in this gym challenge where you had to eat a certain way. I literally ate Tenny's pizza every single day, but I had the cauliflower crust.
And guess what? Homeboy's got a six pack.
But no, and it's so like, honestly, it's like my go-to. I love the cauliflower crust, and I'll get like chicken on it.
It is really good.
Chicken.
Or some people, everyone's got a different diet they're on. That's fine. The keto crust.
That one for us has been killing it. So on this podcast, we had Drew Manning, which is like Mr. King Ding-a-ling of keto.
Keto King Ding-a-ling.
Yeah, he's been plugging us like, and not like we've been paying him or anything to do it. He just... I have it on there. He said, this is the best keto out on the market and keto pizza on the market. I'm like, hell yeah, it's the best keto. Right. But a lot of you guys are on keto. It only has 4 grams of net carbs per slice or 5 total grams of, carbs. Yeah.
Carbs.
5 grams total, 4 grams net per slice. So it's a great way if you're on keto to be able to stay on keto and still have pizza, which normally you cannot do.
Well, and it's kind of nice if you got a bunch of kids, you can be like, okay, well, I'm going to order these for the kids and I'll get myself a keto crust.
I'll tell you guys, so the gym challenge thing or whatever, we started keto hardcore and I've done freaking awesome. I will praise myself. So
yes,
has Brindy.
We're tapping you on the back.
Killed it. And I could not tell you how much of a lifesaver that keto pizza was. We would have it once a week. At least it tastes just like regular pizza. I actually really like the crust. Even not doing keto, I think it's delicious.
I don't ever eat the keto pizza because
it's really, really good.
It is good if you're on keto. I would not suggest people that love pizza just to order the keto crust.
Right.
See, that's how honest I am. I could have totally just taken that and been like, yes. Here, but the rest of us that are not on keto,
for sure,
don't get the keto crust. I'm telling you, it's good, but it's not better than our normal crust.
The cauliflower crust, however,
really I'm praising it because I love it.
Yeah,
for someone that eats normal pizza all the time, the keto crust is still good. I still like it.
Oh,
I don't like it as much as the other ones.
And the cauliflower, I will say, my kids will eat it.
Boom.
They all the time. They eat it. So, boom. Me and Matt, as always.
Boom.
And we have Stephanie Christensen here today.
So excited.
Who's become one of our really good friends. And she's like the funnest person to hang out with. Me and Kevin always talk about our favorite thing about you, Steph, is you are always down to hang out. We'll be like, we're not doing anything tonight. What should we do? Let's call Stephanie and Kevin. I bet they'll do something fun. You guys are always up to do something fun. We'll be like, do you want to go watch a game? Do you want to... come over and have a drink? Do you want, like, you're just super cool about it. I'm so not like that. I'm way too lazy. I'd be like, I'm in my pajamas.
You don't seem that way.
You're not lazy. You're not lazy. You're antisocial.
Just kidding. I'm a little antisocial. I mean, I'm literally like in my sweats right now. It's hardly fine. This is how I work.
Well, and it's funny because most of the time when I do get a text from you, we are in the middle of doing something. It's usually related to the animals, the chores outside. Kevin's on the tractor and I'm doing something outside. So I'm like, oh, yes, we're in.
You're like, get me out of here.
As soon as I tap Kevin, we're going out with Tenny's tonight.
I love it. It's seriously amazing because we're not very good planners. We never have been. We're very much like, it's Friday night. It's like 7 o'clock. Should we do something? And so you guys are really good at moving with our no plans, where it's like, hey, we're going to go out to dinner. Do you guys want to go?
Yeah.
Not very many people are like that.
Well, and you remember the one, even when our well was out, and I was like, well, I will, if it's okay if I shower at your house first.
That was my favorite. That's when I was like, yes, I know, we're good friends. She's totally comfortable taking a shower at my house before we go out. This is awesome.
Yeah,
you did hear that right, everybody. Her well was out.
I know.
A well, because you guys live out in
Cedar Fort.
Cedar Fort, yeah. AKA the wilderness. No, just kidding.
Yeah, they live like on a farm.
Yeah, we have like 7 acres. It's not, it's nothing fancy. We've got 6 goats and 8 egg-laying hens, a turkey, and a rooster.
Which, by the way, I ate all those eggs. They were awesome. If you ever need to get rid of eggs, I will take them from you.
I meant to bring some. I just told Matt that.
I have your bowl. I forgot to bring that too.
That's okay.
So yeah, Stephanie has a cool story. And, well, just your life in general is just, it's not the typical. And so I want to know, where are you from originally?
Oh, well, this is the thing too. I kind of feel like everybody has their own story to tell, so I don't feel like I'm that exceptional, you know? But looking at a series of events, I think, man, my ACE score is probably, it's actually really high, but I've been lucky.
Your ACEs score?
Yeah. You know, the...
Yeah, yeah. Okay. The listeners don't know what that is, right? The ACEs was this test that they did back in the 70s or the 80s. It was actually Kaiser Permanente put out, and there's 8 questions on this test, and you answer yes or no to these questions. And it's basically just like, how freaking gnarly was your childhood?
Trauma, yeah.
Yeah, did you grow up with somebody who went to prison? Or did you parents get divorced? Were you ever hit? Was mom ever hit, right? Like all these things. Was dad ever hit? Was somebody actively using drugs in your house? And you just kind of like dink them off, like, oh. And anything above 3, they count as like an adverse childhood. And what they did when Kaiser did this study is they basically... they were trying to figure out like how to like treat physical ailments, and they did this study and they found that like people with like major health problems, the one common denominator amongst all of them, even if they were different health problems, was their ACEs score. And so now
we test ACEs all the time. So a lot of health problems can be stimulated from mental or
childhood
emotional trauma.
Right, okay. Childhood trauma. So this was like the first... Sorry, you shouldn't have said ACEs. Here we go. Matt's off for the races. Okay.
I think it's fascinating. I didn't know.
Well, because childhood trauma, that's my thing. That's what I do, right? Like anybody who comes to do treatment or whatever, they're always like, well, what are you going to do? I'm like, we're going to talk about when you were a kid. And they're like, I don't want to talk about that. It has nothing to do with it. I'm like, well, let me tell you about the ACEs test. So you're well in the know. So your ACEs score, you're like, oh, it's probably pretty high.
Yeah, I've studied a lot about it just in like self-help things. And of course, in education, I'm an educator. So I've read a lot about that. So yeah,
like where did you grow up? Because this I don't remember actually.
I grew up in Missouri in a small town in the northwest corner of the state called Maryville, and everyone knew everyone. You know, everyone goes to one elementary, one middle school, and one high school. So we all grew up together. No one gets away with anything in a town like that, right? So
there's good and bad, right?
Yeah.
Okay, mom, so, dad, brothers, sisters.
My parents were divorced for as long as I can remember. And I actually found a paper from when I was digging through my stuff before college. And I found out that they were divorced when I was about 3 months old. So he was kind of the dad that would pick us up on weekends or, you know, whenever he could. He was a truck driver and would take us places. And sometimes I'd go on road trips with him in his diesel. And so we drove many, many miles together. Wow. I actually did not like it, but I didn't like him. But but I liked the experience of being able to see new places and stuff.
And you have just one brother?
I have 2 older brothers.
Okay.
So our mom died when I was in the 8th grade. And
oh, this is, I feel like, our common, one of our many common bonds. How old were you?
I was almost 14. Sorry, I've been thinking a lot about this today, actually.
You're doing great. We love tears here, because that means you're, like, being honest and real and stuff. It's badass. Keep going.
Mostly because I was thinking about this earlier today, because my oldest brother and he was a senior in high school when she passed away, and my other brother was a junior in high school. I was in eighth grade, and it was the first weekend that school had started. She got in a car accident. My oldest brother. Sorry.
No, don't.
You're doing great.
Tell it the way you feel it. Don't feel like you have to hold back anything. Like tears or anything.
He was in a hospital about 45 minutes away from our house. And my mom worked a couple different jobs for our family, and she was going to pick him up for the weekend. He was he had had suicidal attempts, and so he was getting help in a hospital about 45 minutes from our home. And she got off a night shift of work and was going to pick him up for the weekend, and fell asleep at the wheel and got in a head-on car crash, and she was in a coma for 2 days before she died. But that brother, I always worry about him, and so I do try to talk to him regularly. We just talked a couple days ago, but he's doing really well, actually. But I still just worry about him, you know.
Yeah, because you kind of, if I understand it correctly, like when mom passed away, you kind of took on like this mom role, even though you were the youngest for your brothers, right?
I sort of did. I felt like I did.
But that's even like the energy time you give is like this really like caring, loving, motherly energy, which is like my favorite thing about you. But
yeah, we were kind of all separated. We were separated at the time. An LDS family took me in. We were Catholic previous to this, and I tried to continue to be an active Catholic, you know, going whenever you wake up, or going when you wake up in time. For sure, Christmas and Easter, things like that, our family went. But my brothers both went to different families, and I went to this LDS family, and so our lives just took a different turn. You know, we all went in different directions, and they thought that since I was later adopted by the LDS family, they thought that I didn't want anything to do with them. And I just recently found this out. But I tried to explain to them that wasn't the case, that it was, I didn't have a choice in the matter. I was basically told that I was living with this new family, and I had to live by their rules, go to their church, and I wasn't, since my brothers weren't members and had different values or whatever, that I wasn't able to hang out with them and their friends because they drank or they were partying and things like that. And so I essentially was ripped away from them. And so I've been trying to rebuild those relationships with them.
Which is like this secondary abandonment trauma.
Yeah.
Right? Like the only stability you have left after you, a third, right? Dad, mom, brothers. And you're just kind of like, oh, I'm super alone now, I guess. And
yeah.
Well, and you probably wanted to belong to that family that you're living with too, as much as you're like, maybe didn't care for and need the religion side. It was just like, well, this is where I am right now. So you're trying to fit in as best you can.
And safety, right? I mean, like the most basic of all human needs is to just feel, to have some sort of like certainty and safety and predictability in my life. And I'm trying to create this new life and everything's so unpredictable. And these are the people I'm supposed to rely on. And now, wait, they're ripping my family? God, how?
Yeah.
Confusing for that little girl, huh? My goodness.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. I guess I just, I wanted to fit in there. I wanted to do the things that I was supposed to do as I learned about the Mormon church, and for the most part, I knew I could be on board. You know, I wasn't going to drink alcohol. I'd already made that decision. I wasn't going, the word of wisdom and the laws of chastity, those were like easy as a, you know, 13, 14 year old girl. And, it wasn't until later I found comfort in it all. I remember thinking, oh, I can have, I'll see my mom again. I'll be able to be with her again. We learned about eternal families and this is great. And then it came to the point later when I was able to do temple work and, I wanted to do my mom's temple work. So I started it and, I found out I couldn't be sealed to her. I had already been sealed to this LDS family that had taken me in. And so I was really, from then on, I had a shelf. Once I realized I couldn't be sealed to my own mom, I knew that it wasn't the church I was going to stay in forever. So.
Well, that's heartbreaking. I feel like, and people who are in the church understand, and people who don't, I guess I just want you to understand, like, this whole sealing process, it's a big deal when you're a member of the church. You feel like it's a make or break. It's the only way you're going to see your family in the next life, whatever that means. It's very, it can either be mentally, like, and emotionally reassuring, or it can wreck you. And I have found both in my life. There were times when I found it very hopeful and supportive, and then there have been times that it's really wrecked me and really been a tough thing to swallow.
Yeah. Well, I just always had questions about how's this going to work out if I'm not going to be able to be even in the same kingdom as her. And I have family in Japan that I still kept in touch with on my mom's side. And I thought, I tried sending them a Book of Mormon, and later we learned that they're like, we're flexible, we can be whatever religion we want. And I thought, oh, that is a great way to live. And so, yeah.
Less pressure, huh?
Yeah, and then my two biological brothers, they weren't interested. One's born again Christian, the other is unsure of anything. So, and they're both content in what they believe. So, and I just thought, well, they're never going to be Mormon. This is not going to work.
Yeah. Cause if they're not Mormon, then
yeah, I'm not going to be with them. I don't know. I just felt like there was always this like nagging or some kind of shoulder weight for me that I just felt like, how is this life going to work out? What's going to happen after this life? And I just wanted to stop worrying about it.
Have you kind of reconciled some of those beliefs? Like, do you believe something now that's comforting or helpful, or do you not know, or where are you at with it now?
I am unsure, but I'm also comfortable with not knowing. I don't feel like I can ever really know, even if I continue to search or try to find something that fulfills it. I don't know. I just feel like I'm okay with not knowing exactly what's going to happen after I die.
I actually think that's like an incredibly healthy way to think, like from my upbringing, because nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. People can say they know. People can think they know. People can hope they know, but nobody knows. Yeah. And so being comfortable with not knowing, but living your life the way that makes you happy and fulfilled, I feel like is a very healthy way to live.
For sure. Well, yeah. And you look in like common sects or religious beliefs or whatever, one of the core tenets, I think we've even talked about this on the podcast before, is faith, right? Which, you know, there's a million different ways to explain it, but really the thing behind having faith in something or believing something is just like, I can't know this thing for sure, so I'm going to believe it because I want to, because it's helpful, because mm-hmm. I see evidence that that's probably going to be something that helps me in my life.
Yeah.
What gets really messy, right, is where you have doctrines or teachings or people who come in and say, hey, guess what? You don't need that anymore, right? I got some answers for you. You can throw that stuff aside and just do what I tell you to do, and you don't even need that anymore. Like, do the thing that the way that I say, and then you're going to have certainty, which feels like safety. It feels like, oh, I now have answers to these huge questions. And I was actually listening to this really cool podcast yesterday. Rogan had this guest on. And this is this guy's expertise. He's a college professor, tenured professor. And his expertise is in religion, death, psychedelics, and sexuality. That's what this guy studies and teaches. It was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Anyways, but what this guy, he said, it was totally accurate. He said, religion is our answer to trying to make sense of death, the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is totally what it is.
It is.
It's totally what it is. And so if death is something that we actually can't make sense of at all, of course we're going to be grasping at straws. But the moment... In my opinion, the moment somebody comes up and says, hey, I got some answers and you don't need this faith thing or this belief thing anymore and you're going to know for sure what's going on, I have become extremely
skeptical.
Sure.
Almost resistant when somebody says something like that, because it just feels like but the whole point is that we don't know. Mm-hmm. That's the point.
Yeah.
And so I love that you're just like, I'm not really sure anymore. Yeah. That's exactly where I'm at.
Well, I think
because you can be.
Yeah, for so long I felt so sure that one way was the way, and when it didn't work, it really didn't work. And so, and it brought me a lot of stress that I didn't even realize that I had until I decided it wasn't right for me. And then I felt like this huge weight was lifted off and I don't have to worry about what's going to happen after I die. How's this plan going to work out? I just stopped worrying about it.
So how long did you live with that family?
The time that I was 13 until through the end of my senior year, 18.
And then where'd you go?
And then I went to Ricks College in Rexburg, Idaho. I left like 4 days after graduation. I could not wait to...
You're ready.
Yeah, I think I was just ready to explore that great big world of Rexburg.
Is that where you met Kevin?
Yes, we met that first summer after high school. But he lived across the street from me, but we never dated or anything. He had a girlfriend back home, and I started dating a different guy. And but we hung out a lot, and then he went on his mission, and then... Yeah, and after we continued to write through his mission. His first letter to me was on toilet paper, and he's like, I'm writing you this on this tissue so that you can wipe your tears because you miss me so much. And I was like, Kevin, who's this from? Like,
that's so cheesy. I love it so much.
What in the world? And it was just funny notes like that. Sometimes he'd write notes in like cereal boxes or, you know, just funny stuff. So I kept them all and I made this little binder for him. And we developed a really good friendship. And then I went to BYU Hawaii after I graduated from Ricks. And then he came out to visit, and it was like, I was actually dating a different guy at BYU Hawaii. And I said, hey, I have a friend coming home from a mission. I want to spend some time with him this week. He's going to visit. And the next time I talked to that boyfriend, I was like, so I'm getting married.
Sorry, homie, you didn't make the cut.
I did not go over well.
Hey, smart for Kevin. He's like, I'll come out to Hawaii. I know what I got.
Yeah, it worked out well. So
he's a freaking stud. Kevin's a good really, guy. Really good dude. That he's one of the hardest working guys that I know.
Yeah.
And you guys both are. So that's fun. Totally like work ethic is kind of like your like jam, huh?
So what did you graduate in?
I did special education, so.
Which is, to me, like, I feel like if there is a heaven, anyone who does special, because that is such a, what's the word? It's like so fulfilling. Much fulfilling, but so much like emotional, like attachment and working through it, like patience. Like, I just think it's incredible.
Thank you.
I can't handle just my own kids, so I think you're
amazing. Well, working with your own kids is definitely the hardest. Even working with my own kids is really hard. So,
guys went from where'd you live once you got married?
So let's see, we moved to Idaho, lived there for a little bit while I worked on. I had just a little bit left of my bachelor's, so I started at Idaho State University, and they actually require you to dual major. So I started doing the LEd and special ed program, and then it was going to take me another 2 years. And so we ended up moving back to Hawaii. I finished up in a semester, and then he continued on there. And then after Hawaii, we moved to New Mexico. We lived there for a year. He started it was called Neighborhood Gold. It was a down payment assistance for home buyers. So we did that for a year, then moved to Ohio. And we were in Ohio for like 9 or 10 years doing kind of the same thing. He was doing that, and it became more of a residual income for him. So we bought some franchises, Filter Fry.
You guys
talked to Teddy about that.
Seriously, like there's, we learn something new about these guys every time we hear with them. I'm not exaggerating. Like we just learned the other night that Kevin's a nurse.
That's when he went to nursing school.
Kevin's a registered nurse. Never knew that.
Wait, well, he kind of had like a, I know. See, now you need to have him on here, right?
It's so cool.
No.
He is a jack of all trades and he's brilliant. He like the way he does stuff. Anyways, you guys are incredible.
Thank you.
And humble. Most people don't respond like that. I want you to know, I give a lot of people compliments. We give a lot of people compliments. Most people are just like, thank you. They're like, oh, you know, and they like downplay. Like, I love that. Like, anyway, sorry. Trying to make you blush more. Sorry.
Then let's see. We moved to Utah kind of to be closer to family. And the opportunity arose for him to come out here, and he ended up starting this manufacturing company out here with an engineer. And, that's kind of where we are now.
Okay, so question.
Yes.
Where has your dad been through all this?
So he still lives in Missouri. I haven't seen or heard from him since my mom died, since I think the day of her funeral. And that was kind of in my mind, that was my plan. I never wanted to see him again. He was abusive when I was younger, and he molested me and hurt me physically. So
you're like, get out of my life. Yeah. Has he tried to come in at all?
No, he hasn't. So
have you heard hopefully. Is he in your brother's lives at all?
He was for a little while, I think, in the beginning, but I think that they've both been able to get him out of their lives as well. So
what's that like for you now?
I think now it's just like I'm more protective of my own kids. I don't want them to I talk to them a lot about like if they go to someone's house. I don't prevent them from sleeping over at people's houses, but I do talk to them. At least I did in the past more. Just, you know, being able to talk to me that, you know, their body is their body. No one should be touching them without permission. I've been vigilant about that, as well as like helping them understand why I feel that way. They know all about Fred Bacon, you know. They know that he was abusive towards me, and that they'll never see him, and he'll never have anything to do with their lives. I'm just kind of waiting for an obituary to surface.
Yeah, I bet.
I think that's really important. I feel like something I've tried to do with my kids, and I don't even feel like I do a very good job, explain to them where I came from. Yeah. And like those types of things, like, this is why I feel the way I feel. This is why this matters to me. Because I think sometimes we get in the mode of, I'm the mom, so do what I say.
Yeah.
I know better. I'm smarter. I'm older, whatever. Instead of like explaining, here's why. You want to know why I don't want you to do this? Let me tell you what I did.
Yeah.
And I know maybe, I don't know if that's like right or wrong, but that's how I feel. I feel like my kids are going to learn better from me being honest and telling, you know, my shit. Like just telling them how great, I had a great childhood and I had such a good life. And that's why I want you to have it. No, like here's the things that happened to me. Yeah. Like, not that you can't tell the good too, but
for sure,
just sometimes tell the bad, where it's like, here's what happened. And this is why I'm a freak about this situation, because here's what happened to me.
Yeah. And I think it helps the kids realize that you had shit, like you dealt with stuff and you know, you can sympathize better. I don't want my kids to think that I had some perfect life. They know I didn't. So I think it's funny that I had some, you know, that I was a perfect kid. I know I wasn't. So I just want them to know that I'm a person and I have faults and I screw up and I still do. And I apologize to my kids so much. Like, oh,
that's so huge.
I just feel like they're not going to learn to apologize to me if I don't apologize to them. They have to know that even adults make mistakes.
100%.
Adults are like grown up kids. We never figure it out. I'm going to leave this earth with not having figured my shit out. So
me too. Join the club.
No, I think that's really cool because like I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, look, I, especially with my girls, I'm like, I didn't have a mom when I was your age. So I don't know how to be a mom to you as far as like having this example. I just don't.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I think I should be doing and I'm doing the best I can. But when you have girls or you have daughters or whatever, if you feel like something I did or the way I was wasn't how you, then don't. I'm not offended by you doing it different because it's like you said, I don't know what I'm doing. I am guessing and I'm taking my best guess every day. Yeah. So if your guess is better than mine, oh, please do it.
Yeah.
Like take it and run.
I read somewhere or heard it in a podcast. It's terrible, but that if there was a, you know, if the five steps to becoming the best mom or the five, you know, five quick ways to this worked, then we wouldn't need 50,000 books written about it, you know? And so yes. Everybody's so different. True. Every situation is different. I love stalking my daughter on Instagram right now because she's such a social justice fighter and she just gets it. And things that she is sharing and learning about are things that I am learning about. And I think, oh man, she's so far ahead of me right now. And she's 18. So
I agree. That. That's like Brevin, my 20-year-old. Through all this political stuff, it's been super hard on me. Yeah. And he's different from me. We think different. We have different views. We voted for different people.
Yeah.
But we get along.
Yeah.
And I love, like, he sat and talked to me in my kitchen a couple weeks ago about, like, why he felt the way he did. And then I explained why I felt the way. No fighting, no arguing. It was so cool because I feel the same way. I'm like, you're so much smarter than I was at 20.
Yeah.
And you are going, your life is different. Your culture you're growing up in is different. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know how you feel because I don't mind changing, but I need to sit and like have someone talk, you know, be nice and talk to me and not be angry and talk to me. And it's really cool to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way, especially in politics. I don't know enough to feel like I can carry on a really good political conversation. But I love hearing, we have different points of view in our house and I love hearing all sides. I think it's great. But I love to hear why they feel the way they do. So
I totally agree.
Yeah, well, and cool. I think there's kind of there's a bunch of different theories about parenting, right? But one of the ones that I really like is, So you can be an authoritarian parent, right? An authoritarian parent is like big me, little you. You do what I say because I told you to. You are going to follow the rules because that's how things are going to be in this house, right? And it's this authority figure. And what you teach children, and it's okay. It's not bad. It works, right? What you teach children is respect. And that's great. And they're respectful. And they see you as an authority figure. And studies show that later on in life, your relationship begins to kind of deteriorate. Because if I'm an authority figure to my children and I don't need authority anymore because I'm responsible and I'm autonomous, I can think of my own, my relationship with my parents is going to kind of dwindle. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
There's another style of parenting that's called the humanistic style of parenting. And this is what we're describing, where I look at my kid and I see him and they see me and we are both equally human, going through this really insane, difficult experience, and both of us have ideas about how to do it. Some I'm going to teach you, and guess what? Some you're going to teach me. Actually, I would say my kids teach me more about and remind me more about what really matters in life than anybody else, if I'm willing to listen. And when I'm in authority parent mode, I don't listen. I tell. And it's not a relationship of equals.
Right.
It's a relationship of big me, little you. And it just doesn't work as well. And they feel disconnected and they're, it's just different. And so that humanist type of parenting that we're talking about is so, in my opinion, so important. So yeah. important because kids mm-hmm. just want to be seen as a part of something.
Yeah.
And when you're an authority figure, they're not a part of anything.
But even as an adult. There.
Totally.
Yeah. Like I, cause I would say I grew up in an authoritarian. I almost feel like that was like,
that's how a lot of us generational
thing.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
But, I'm not super close with my dad and it's not that I don't love him. It's just, we're not close because it's still there. Mm-hmm. It's still, I'm smarter than you. I know more than you. And so I've taken a different route and my kids may take a completely different route yeah. and I'm totally yeah. fine with that. Just because I'm like, well, this is what my relationship with my kids, it trumps everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And so it's like, if that means I have to swallow my pride and say I'm sorry and you know, admit I'm wrong a lot, it's totally worth it to me.
Well, and yeah. for you, like, I think having a mother relationship is like unbelievably important for you because
mm-hmm. I never had that.
Mm-mm. And I would imagine for you, it's the same thing, right? Like, I want for my children what I wasn't afforded. And I think that's why for you, the humanist kind of style of parenting just comes really naturally, which I think it's wise to kind of take a step back from that and realize like, oh, if this is like the natural thing that we just kind of do when we really go into our hearts and ask ourselves like, how do we want to connect with our children? God, maybe that is, I don't know if better is the right word, but at least as effective as the authoritarian way and possibly selfish. We have to acknowledge that too, right? Like selfishly, I really want to have a relationship with my kids when I'm older.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want them to see me as an asshole. So I'm going to kind of like, I'm going to kind of pass the buck a little bit.
Like, I want to be friends. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. And you can have, there's different types of friend relationships, right? Like it's not a horrible, awful thing to be friends with your kids. It's actually probably really good. Cause I don't know, maybe they'll like feel safe and like trust you and come to you when they have problems and
yeah.
tell you things sometimes you don't want to hear.
Yeah. How many times have we talked about stuff that our kids tell us? They're like, I never would have told my parents that. Yeah.
So funny. Right.
And then yeah. there's a little scared part of me in there that's like, well, call them. I'm like, if they trust me enough to come to me and tell me this stuff, am I like condoning it? Am I like giving them permission to like make these mistakes? I don't think that's necessarily true.
Either.
I actually think it's quite the opposite. I think it removes the shame because sure. for me as a kid, I couldn't tell my parents when I made those mistakes and I just kept making them over and over and over and tried to hide it from them until I got caught and then I just felt like a horrible, no good piece of garbage, right?
Well, at a certain age, I mean, and you know this because you have three of your kids are adults, right?
Two are adults, yeah, and then two are teenagers.
But it's like condoning what, I don't know, with my kids, I'm like, so my two adult children, I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Whether I say it's right or yeah. wrong. So I'd rather just be able to have like real conversations about what's going on.
Yeah. We had a friend of ours recently messaged me saying, hey, I really like your son, my oldest son. I don't know if I can say his name. Can I say his name? Is Brayden?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he messaged me saying, I really like him and I really appreciate, you know, his thoughts. I think they had some social media banter that went down. Actually, our friend blocked Brayden. And so he's like, I just want you to, can you just tell him that I think that of him and that I'm sorry for whatever happened or whatever. And so I let Brayden know. And Brayden's like, that would actually mean something if he hadn't blocked me already. And and like he could, I'm an adult. I was like, I know you're an adult. I don't know what like to say.
I'm just a middleman.
Yeah. So it was kind of interesting. They're adults and they're going to have their own fights. They're going to have, you know, they're going to fight for what they believe in, fight for what they want. And I'm not going to step in. I'm, you know, it's actually fun for me to watch from a different perspective as, you know, just another human in his life and, mm-hmm. and not feel like I need to say, Hey, you need to filter that or something. I just, I like that they're becoming who they want to become.
And you're allowing them to, which is really cool.
I don't feel like I had that opportunity for so long. And so maybe I'm a little more lax in it even. I don't know. But I feel like I feel like it's important for them to step up to the plate when they want to step up to the plate and have the courage. I didn't have courage for a long time, I think, in standing up to my own, I don't know, demons, if you will, growing up. When I was taken in by this family, there were so many things that just didn't feel right to me, but I kind of ignored it thinking, oh, this is how it's supposed to be. You know, Christmas rolls around and they buy me presents and then say, okay, this is what we spent on Christmas for you. You need to write us a check. You're going to pay this amount back to us. And I just thought, I'm just going to get like a Twix bar next year or something. Cause I didn't ask for any of this stuff. Yeah. I didn't ask for a CTR ring. I didn't ask for new scriptures. I didn't ask for any of this stuff. And so it was frustrating to me. And I didn't learn until later that my brothers didn't have that same situation in the homes that they were taken in. And so that was hard for me.
Earlier you said like you felt like maybe you didn't have as much courage then as you do now, right? Like you didn't have courage when you're a kid or something. So what do you feel like, if you could pick a couple of experiences or one where you were like, this is kind of where I learned courage. Think of anything?
Oh, yeah, I think the ability, just having the courage to question my own belief.
What gave you that courage? Like, was there experiences? Was there moments? Was there thinking? Was it a person?
It was thinking, for sure. It was thinking over and over. Every new ward that we had gone to, and you know, the bishop wants to get to know you, and I'd say, here's my situation. I was born to, you know, this mom, and I was later adopted by this family, and I'm told that I can't be sealed to her. How is this going to work out? I asked it so many times and they're like, well, you just need to have faith that it'll all work out. And I got so sick of that. I just thought, this is not like, if we have all the answers here, this is not a good answer for me just to have faith.
Yeah. We have all the answers, like? But we don't know the answer to this one. Yeah. So just have faith.
So it wasn't until later when my own husband's grandma, she was married to her husband for like just a few years, like maybe 5 years, 6 years. I don't know. He died and they were actually never sealed, but she was sealed to him after his death. And we didn't find out that until just recently, but she remarried and was sealed to her next husband after petitioning the first presidency for many years. And finally was able to get it approved. And that was heartbreaking for Kevin because his first grandpa, you know, he's like, he got the shaft. He was sealed to her. He, you know, what's going to happen with us? Like, are you going to cancel our sealing if I die and you're going to be sealed to someone else? Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't know how to even go about this. This is weird. I was like, we'll just pinky swear that I'm not going to do that and we'll call it good. He's like, okay, fine. But it's kind of like it's always been like one of those nagging questions for me. And I was gospel doctrine teacher at the time that I learned about the second anointing. And I just thought it said specifically in the manual not to talk about it. And I thought, well, I'm going to at least learn about it then. And then I went down a rabbit hole and Kevin was in his own rabbit hole too. And we finally talked about things and we just were able to question openly. And we had a lot of closed door discussions, so that our kids, we weren't like impacting them because this was all new to us. And, we just like both realized we've got to figure out how to get out. Quietly.
Quietly.
You know, it's super fascinating. Yes. It's fascinating that sealing stuff of parent, like I said, it's, you don't realize unless you're really entrenched in that, in the religion, how important that is. And I remember because my mom died when I was young. Yeah. And I remember when my dad remarried, or when he married my stepmom now, and she's great. But I remember when they got sealed in the temple and I was devastated. I was like, wait, you're sealed to my mom. It's like, well, I can be sealed to both. And I'm like, so now we're polygamous.
Yeah.
I didn't sign up for that. Yeah. I did not join the, and nothing against polygamous. I freaking love you guys.
Yeah.
But I did not join that. I didn't sign up for that in my mind. So to learn about that, that was for me, like you talk about shelf, where you set things up. They're like, this doesn't feel right, but I'm going to set it aside for a minute.
Yeah.
Until there's too many doesn't feel rights, which there was. But I get that feeling that you're saying with you and Kevin, where you're just like, this is such a big deal.
Yeah.
And the way you're telling me and the way this is looking for me does not feel right. It feels actually completely wrong. That, okay, so my dad's gonna be married to two people now in heaven. And my mom didn't have a choice in that. So I'm assuming if that's how it works, right? So anyways, it's a big deal to people when you're in.
So I think circling back to courage, I think I finally had the courage to allow myself to say, this is not the religion that I signed up for. This is not what I agree with. And so it may work for some people. It doesn't work for me. And I think I had to just allow myself to say that.
You can't hear a stomach growling through the microphone. Don't worry.
It's a scary thing. When I love the metaphor of the shelf thing, right? Like, I think everybody has, we have like these shelves, and we're constantly shelving stuff, right? And there's like a religion shelf and a this shelf and a that shelf and a whatever. And the metaphor that's used all the time is like, well, this is the thing that broke my shelf. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden everything came crumbling down. And I was just like, oh boy, now I got to pick up the pieces. There's all these questions that I had and what do I do? And what I love about when my shelf broke or whatever you want to use was I think I was able to kind of look down at all the pieces and then look up, and all of these people whose shelves had also broken were like, hey man, me too.
That's how me and Steph met.
Totally.
Yeah.
So because when you go through a faith crisis, what we call it, there's a lot of like support groups you can join. And there was this, I don't even remember which one, but an XMO group on Facebook.
Well, I think that one wasn't even an XMO group, right? It was a Thoughtful Faith, which was...
Oh, Thoughtful Transitions. Yep. That was it, right? Anyways, it was a lot of people going through faith transitions. And Stephanie reached out and was like, hey, like we kind of live out by you guys. And
our names rhyme, Kevin and Bethany, Kevin and Stephanie.
Yeah.
And we kind of shared some, because you kind of share a little bit on that page.
Yeah.
And we'd share some similar experiences. And so she's like, hey, do you guys want to meet and go out to dinner sometime? And me and Kevin were like, yeah, we totally would. Because you are constantly, it's like you kind of lost this tribe. And you're looking for a new one, you know, and you're like, I'm looking for people now who won't judge me for having this new opinion, this new thought. And so anyways, that's how we met, like, what, 3 years ago?
I think so.
And it's just kind of grown since then. And I'm not on any of those pages anymore because I don't feel the need for it anymore.
Yeah. And I got to the point where I felt like the new person coming in was me, and I wanted to be there for them and say, hey, we're here for you. But at the same time, I was like, been there, done that. And
you get to a point where you've moved past.
Yeah.
You're like, now I'm now to this point where the anger, the bitterness, that's all gone. Yeah. I've moved past. I've developed this life that I really enjoy. I'm really happy with. So I don't really want to go back there. And if you need help, I'm totally here to talk, but I can't dive back into that again. Well, that was hard.
There's a lot of freaking big emotions that come up with all that stuff.
And triggers and that can set you off.
And it's hard and it's confusing. You don't know what to do. And it's just like, I've kind of got some answers or some, I don't know, some new stability that really feels great. That old stuff that used to keep me stable, like I don't even need to worry about it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not even mad that I can't be stable with that anymore because I have this new stuff. And I don't know, maybe it's like better.
For me,
I had someone say to me actually that we're just so sad for you. And I thought, you know, how about you don't be sad for me and I won't be sad for you that you're still in it, and we'll call it good. Like, I don't want you to be sad for me. I I'm more happy now than I've ever been. I just had so many questions, too many questions that I never felt like I could ask, because it was either something that wasn't really talked about openly, or people just didn't have good answers for me.
Okay, so question, because I know this is a big thing.
Yeah.
So you're going through all these changes. You're learning things. You know, you're finding yourself, yeah, and you're being brave.
Yeah.
How does that affect your marriage?
You know, I think for us, it hasn't been easy. That's for sure. Because we have tried. You know, you're figuring out your new self. And mm-hmm. for us, it's been harder because at least for Kevin, I think, and maybe that's his story to tell, but his bubble, the perfect, you know, package that was all wrapped up nicely with our pinky swear that I was never going to marry anyone or be sealed to anyone, after he died or whatever, it kind of burst. And so for him, it's all he experienced. For me, it was different. It was more of a relief. So we got to a point where he's like, I don't see how you can't be traumatized from this. And I'm like, I don't see how you are traumatized from it. So we just had different perspectives, but it's been good for both of us, but also difficult. It's, you know, people say, oh, it's, you just wanted to live an easy life because you wanted to leave the church and have it so easy. It has been the hardest thing ever, especially families, relationships. We negotiated our exit for a very long time because we knew that we would hurt relationships. People don't want their kids to play with the kids that aren't Mormon, or, mm-hmm. you know, Stephanie drinks coffee now. A lot of coffee.
Well, and there's that awkwardness, right?
Yeah, it's
like
just
you go to a family event and you're like, yep, we're the
Exmos.
Yeah.
And so what?
We're the rebels.
Yeah, so people don't want to talk about it. We did have one couple talk to us openly about it. They were like, let's talk about the elephant in the room. And we're like, oh, sweet. They want to know, like, what happened to us. Yeah,
they want real.
Yeah. And she actually said, my friend said to us, your leaving the church has been the hardest thing on our marriage ever. And I was taken back. She was crying. She was really hurt by it. And I was like, I didn't even know how to respond because I thought, my leaving the church has affected your marriage.
Like, can you even think about mine now?
Yeah.
Can you even imagine?
And I, in my mind, I was reviewing things that I knew about their marriage, that they had gone through bankruptcy, infertility, a son in prison, you know, divorce, things like that. And I thought, but my leaving the church is the hardest thing on your marriage. And I just couldn't even wrap my head around it.
Damn.
So
I think too, sometimes, yeah. And I think this is typical, not just of leaving religions, getting older. Like, yeah. I'm recognizing now, you know, we're in our 40s and yeah. it's like this midlife weirdness, right? Our yeah. kids are getting older and becoming independent. And so therefore we become a little more independent. And I think we either, as married people, we either grow together because we're mm-hmm. changing, we change mm-hmm. together,
sure.
or we grow apart, we mm-hmm. change apart. And yeah. I've seen both, and I think it's really hard. And I think the cool thing watching you and Kevin, and I feel like it's very similar to a lot of our friendships, has been we work really hard to grow together, even yeah. though it's not easy. And there is a lot of strain there, and there's a lot of, you know, issues in any marriage. So it's been fun to watch you guys because you come from such completely different backgrounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're constantly figuring it out. You're constantly working through things. And I think it gives a lot of hope to other marriages and other people when they see people working.
Yeah.
Because marriage is work.
Yeah. And I think that taking religion out of marriage helps you to really reevaluate what you want out of your marriage. I'm not married to him because of a religious commitment. I'm married to him because I want to be married to him. I mean, I see religious people, I guess I could call them religious people, like my parents, for example, are still married, but I don't look at them and think, wow, they're really happy in their marriage.
Yeah.
I feel like they coexist in a relationship, in a house. I don't feel like that, and I never want to have that kind of relationship. I think that that would put me to an early grave. I think I would be miserable and be ready to.
Well, you're with someone now, and I feel the same way. You're with someone because you want to be with them, and not because.
Because I have to be, not because I have to be.
Because otherwise you're ruining your next life.
Right, yeah. And
yeah,
I get that. So I'm not just enduring it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's something that Kevin and I have revisited multiple times just because, I think especially in the beginning when we were out of religion, you know, it was kind of like, well, what are we doing this for? What's the purpose of our marriage? And I think we're in this to win it. We're mm-hmm. in it to win it, you know, going through life together, helping each other out and not just enduring it. But we want to have fun. I want to have fun in this life.
Oh, so, I say I'm going to enjoy every second.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think are some of the things that work well? Because we talk about this work of marriage, yeah. right? Like what are some of the things that you feel work well to help stay connected, to grow together?
Oh man. So for us, like encouraging each other in our own personal goals, I have put off doing my master's for so long and it's something that he said, you should just do it. You should just do it. And finally it was like, do it now. And I needed that. I think I needed the coronavirus to happen so that I could have some time at home to get started. And yeah, it's been, I think that's definitely something that's been good for me and for us to do, you know, like him supporting me in it has been monumental for me. So
that's cool. Yeah, and I think then it turns where you probably want to be even more supportive of what he wants. For
sure. Yeah.
So supporting like dreams and goals of each other.
Yeah.
So that would require us to also know each other's dreams and goals and talk about those and understand what that means, which means, you know, everybody always says in relationships, number one thing is communication. I wouldn't say it's number one, but it's super duper important.
Yeah.
That we know, right? So if you're like, I know my spouse's goals, do you really? Are you sure? Why don't you ask him?
Yeah.
And that is a hard thing. Like
it is.
When you talk about this leaving religion stuff, Kevin and I, when we were in the church and before we left and stuff, there were things he had shelved and things I had shelved. We didn't even know about each other.
Yeah.
And I think that is, and for me, that's not healthy.
Yeah.
Like we should have known those things. I should have known his struggles in the church. I did not know. He didn't want to tell me.
I think it's typical.
Why do you think we didn't talk about,
Because fear.
What fear of what?
He told me, he said he was fearful of telling me his issues with the church because he thought I was so like hardcore that I would leave him and that we wouldn't stay married. And that is a real thing because it does happen all the time.
And it's so
cool. And it's typical of all relationships, not even just with religious stuff and faith stuff, sure. right? We talked about politics earlier.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about raising kids, how I want to raise my kids and how she wants to raise her kids. It's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sometimes where, you know, Brandy's doing her thing with the kids and I'm just like, I
don't agree.
I would do that. Right. I'm totally judgmental and I can do one of two things. I can look at her and go, I wouldn't do that. Oh my gosh. I'm such a better parent. And then keep it to myself or maybe
so
just
when you're,
judge.
When you're saying like being more communicative, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that is so much bigger and deeper than what I would have thought of years ago.
For sure.
Yeah. Where it's like, you need to communicate everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's hard.
Yeah,
it's
I
scary.
Think it's just the vulnerability piece,
yes.
right? Just to take down your walls and say, this is who I am. You got to
take me or leave me.
Yeah.
Or work with me. Like, okay, yeah. So here's some of my issues. Here's what I've got going on in my head.
For sure.
If you love me, help me.
Well, and when I get vulnerable, I create the freedom to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And rejected, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unless I'm willing to let the walls down and recognize that I do have my own judgments and that we're going to do things differently, and that talking about doing things differently doesn't mean that we are going to grow apart.
Yeah,
right.
Actually, it means we're probably going to grow together because I can learn something from this person who I've committed my entire life to, who mm-hmm. our children share DNA.
Yeah.
Right? Like marriage or raising kids or whatever, whether that's spousal or not, it requires us. It obligates us, it begs us to get vulnerable with one another. And if you think about it, right, like sexual intimacy by design is one of those vulnerable things that you can do with another person. And when you're in a committed relationship and you're doing that together, think about the next couple of days after you get it on, right? Yeah. What's the connection like? It's good.
Yeah.
It's better. It's different. Do you want to know why? One, you exchanged like a bunch of chemicals and stuff, which is awesome. But two, it is a state of vulnerability that feels safe and has a lot of pleasure attached to it. So it's really enticing, right?
Yeah.
But why is that the only state of vulnerability that's okay in a marriage? Maybe not the only, but definitely the one that feels, I don't know, the most pleasurable. I keep going back to that. But there's right. other states of vulnerability. There's other things you can do being vulnerable that actually are just as wonderful and pleasurable and connect you just as much as sexual intimacy, which is super, super cool. Only problem is,
but I think they go,
you gotta step out on the ledge.
So I think they go like being able to be vulnerable in your experiences and your communication and everything that's going on in your life. Well, that leads you to be more vulnerable sexually with your spouse. And so then that it all gets better, right? Because you feel safe. So you're like, okay, now I can really tell you this stuff and here's how I really feel and here's what I really want. And that's not easy.
Right.
So if you're not safe, that will never happen.
Well, and when I do work with couples, inevitably sex always comes up. And so whenever the marriage topic comes up, I've just decided like I got to talk about sex because it's so important.
Yeah.
And once you learn to communicate in that way, like in your private little bedroom thing and say like, oh, I like this. I don't like this. I do like this. It's like Sexy Mike was telling us, right?
Mm-hmm.
That translates over to what's going on outside, right? So Brindy's doing a parenting thing and I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't like that. I can come up to her and be like, hey, I don't like that. And brace myself for the defensiveness initially. Because it's going to happen when she tells me that she doesn't like what I'm doing. I'm going to get defensive. That's normal and natural. Seeing underneath that, recognizing that other human beings are allowed to get defensive and I probably hit a nerve and she's probably hurt, give it some time, circle back to it again later and have the conversation again.
Mm-hmm.
So, so, so important. I would say if I could pick one thing that is helpful in marriage, in relationships, whether that's intimate or not, with your children, it's the circle back.
I agree.
Right.
100%. Yeah. It's the circle back. Something happened, not good time. Let's circle back to this again later. People don't do that. They really don't. That is such a key component for communication. Oh, it's huge.
Even friendships and relationships. I think it's important to be like, okay, this happened and now I'm ready to talk about it.
Yeah. I was just listening to that in Brené Brown's book. I've listened to it a couple times. The Brave
in the Wilderness.
No, it's the leadership one.
Oh,
I know you're talking about. I've read it too.
Dare to lead. Yeah, not brave.
Weird that we're talking about Brené Brown. Gosh, it took us 59 minutes to get a Brené Brown reference.
Well, yeah. Steph, I want you to know I've learned a lot from you, and I feel like I learned a lot. This is my favorite thing about doing this podcast is, it's nice to see other people, how they've gotten through things and then how they're living their lives. Cause I feel like that's how we all learn from each other. It's like, okay, so I remember when we talked about that we had both lost our moms and I was like, oh, well, what's been your experience since then? And I'm like, oh hell yeah, I'm good. That's in my mind, obviously really hard. Right. Yeah. So anyways, it's been good to see, like, it's always good to see other people and what they've gone through, because everyone has a story.
Yeah.
And then how'd you get through it? And then it's hopeful. It gives a lot of people hope.
I know. Sometimes I feel like I got through it, and then other times I think I'm still going through it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just kind of a thing that will always be there. Sometimes I can talk about it really easily, and then other times, you know, I can, you know, bullet point, you know, and then other times it is more of a touch and go emotional thing for me. So
well, I totally agree.
It's like scarring, right?
Yeah.
You have scars on your body, and some of those scars have a lot of meaning to them because they're representative, right? Like I just went and I just went this morning and got my haircut from this awesome woman. Her name's Amanda. She works in American Fork. I'm going to plug her, Bootleg Barbershop. Unbelievable. She gives me some of the best haircuts I've ever had. She's incredible. She just got back from brain surgery.
Oh, wow.
And she has this super awesome, gnarly scar right down the back of her head. And I look at that scar and I go, that's a badass scar. Like that scar represents strength. That scar represents so many things. Why is it that our emotional scarring doesn't always get viewed that way? Maybe our emotional scarring is representation of the most difficult moments in our lives. Really deep pain, especially emotional, spiritual pain, mental pain, scars us. It marks us. It also makes us who we are. And those are the moments of greatest strength, right? In order to grow a muscle, you must tear it first so that it can repair. Emotionally, mentally, spiritually, we're constantly growing and tearing and being ripped apart. And that's why it's so painful. And that's why there's so much suffering. And the people who I've met and who we've brought on the podcast who really open up and are like, yeah, my life has been full of suffering are always the most badass people. Mm-hmm. Always. Because they own their shit. And they're like, I look back on my life. Look how much stuff I've been through. So what? Still going through it. Yeah. That's my favorite thing you've said this whole time. I feel like I'm still going through it. Yep, you are. So am I. So is Bethany. So is everybody else. And so is everybody listening, hopefully realizing like, I'm not alone in this thing. We're all going through it.
And you never get past it.
No, it won't ever end either. It's not supposed to.
Yeah.
Right?
And so many times I say I want to, you know, get past just leaving I've left all the groups.
Past it, leave it behind.
Yeah, but I circle back to it sometimes. You know, I have moments where I'm like, oh, I get frustrated and I have to, you know, take a social media break because I hate seeing quotes from people or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Anything that's triggering.
It's kind of like you said, it's almost like you have a scab and you feel like it's all clearing up.
Yeah.
And then someone kind of pulls it off and you're like, oh,
yeah, why did you do that?
Again, or I'm hurt again, or I'm crying again, or I'm where you're like, I felt like I was good. I felt like I was in a good place.
Yeah.
Because I do. I think it's a constant. It's going to be constant, like, healing.
Well, and when I'm in that place where I'm kind of like, I'm able to like kind of sit back and be like, oh, things are good. Inevitably something happens to like wake me up. Mm-hmm. And those are those moments of courage. Like we talked about earlier, where you get to kind of decide like, okay, is this a wake up call or is this, I'm going to bitch about my life moment.
Am I going to sink into a chair and cry and not function anymore? Or am I going to get up and keep moving?
Yeah.
And
try again. Definitely am one to find distractions. So
me too.
You know, working on my master's. So that's a great distraction.
That's interesting. You call that a distraction. I don't know if I would call that a distraction. That's a lot of work. That's growth. That's strength.
I actually think it's brilliant. That's keep your freaking mind awesome. On something else so it can't wander.
Well,
that's cool. You view that as a distraction though, because that's a hard thing to do. And that's a really great mentality to have. It's just like my normal day to day life. I distract myself by learning and growing and actually getting it. A degree under my belt.
Continue to change instead of like my distraction is to wallow and watch my Real Housewives of whatever.
Do we watch that Real Housewives of Salt Lake last night?
Me and Stephanie were just talking about
crazy. My gosh.
Ooh. I mean,
I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to. Especially after talking
it's
to you.
Fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating. Sure it is. Especially because it's the one from here and you're like, oh, there's a little crazy and a lot of real, like it's a little psycho. So it's fun.
It hit home a little bit.
You know, it's just one of those. It's kind of like, I love like mindless TV. People think it's the weirdest thing, but if I'm doing nothing or if I'm tired, I want to watch mindless TV.
Yeah.
And that's for me, mindless TV, where it's just like,
numbed out.
And I watch and I'm like, nothing. I like my life.
Yeah. It puts in perspective how good you have
my
it.
My friends
look at
are
these people,
pretty
they have
awesome.
Tons of freaking money. Wow, I do not want that much. Like I'm good where I'm at.
Kevin and I like to watch those Caribbean Life, we always dream. We've dreamt about it for so long. Mm-hmm. And so when we took that vacation to Utila, we're like, we dream about it. Are we going to be 60 and still talking about this and dreaming about this? Or are we going to do this? And we're like, we have to do it, because if it doesn't happen right now while we're standing on this beach, we...
Oh, yeah. They're building a house in Tooele. Or Tooele.
Utila.
Utila. Not Tooele. Very different. Very different. Utila, a Caribbean island, which is super... I love stories like that, because I feel like that's what Kevin and I are constantly trying to, like... We're moving towards that. We're like, okay, if we have a dream, let's do it.
Yeah.
Because who the hell knows how long we're going to live or what's next.
Make it happen.
So do it.
Yeah. And the cool thing is once you realize, Kevin's actually helped me learn this a lot. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Just ask that question all the time. Just like make that a part of your regular vocabulary. Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Just do it. Why not? Make it happen. Yeah. You have zero limitations. Why not? Let's do it.
Yeah.
Ask for help. It'll happen if you want it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And you guys are definitely super amazing. Like, I don't know, the poster children of, we're just going to go live on a farm. We're going to do what we want. We're going to freaking raise an awesome family. We're going to go build live our own in the house middle in of the Utila Caribbean.
And hang out.
It's amazing.
That you have to take like a little small boat to get there.
We have a boat there actually. So
I know we're coming to visit. Yeah, as soon as it's all ready, we're going to come.
For sure.
So is the reality show still happening?
Yeah, it's a documentary.
Documentary. Got it.
So as far as I know, they haven't canceled it, but...
Still... waiting still on filming.
But so they are going for like 2 weeks over Christmas.
Yeah, we booked tickets to go there
for
Christmas so with the kids and stuff. So
cool. So stay tuned, people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe you'll be seeing Stephanie and Kevin.
And
on
Bethany
on
and Kevin.
Our mockumentary.
On some island in the Caribbean. Sounds like a dream.
It'll be fun. I'm excited.
Dude, you're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was great.